Unpack your knives and stay. Yes, stay. It's the Top Chef Judges Roundtable podcast here on Reality TV Rehab Ops. Hey, everybody. Mike Bloom here talking about the first episode of the finals. The end game of Top Chef 15 is upon us. And of course, I'm joined by a lovely coterie of partners and other, you know, cowpoke to talk about this episode, the return of a Last Chance Kitchen contestant. But one more goes home. We started with four. We end with four. Let's first start off with somebody who might be doing a little bit better metric to customary conversion than our guest judge did this episode. Haley Strong. Haley, how you doing?
I don't know if I'm feeling woozy from the altitude sickness or depression from Who Went Home.
Oh, it's all compounded in the same, just a general sense of malaise. Like I said, we had one chef returning this episode, so we found it only appropriate if we had one of our fantastic guests from over these past seasons podcast come back to join us as well. So who is that walking through that set of double doors, those saloon doors with that pork pie hat on? Oh my gosh, it's Jim Smith. Jim's, welcome back to the podcast. We're so happy to have you.
Thanks for having me. I am super excited to be back on, and what a great episode to be talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. So we make our transition here from the Denver populace to Telluride to begin, again, the last stage of the season with the finals. I'm pretty sure it's Telluride. I know that I definitely got called out last week that that Stanley Hotel was not in Boulder. It was in Mount Estes. I do apologize about that. I don't know my Colorado geography that well, but I'm pretty sure we were in Telluride this episode, considering how many times they said it. Haley, I know a couple of weeks ago when Antonio Mazzaro was on here, he sort of talked about how he'd felt there really wasn't anything, a lot of inherently Colorado-esque stuff about the season so far. Now that we've sort of made the transition to Telluride and watching these past two challenges take effect, how are you feeling now? Are you still feeling that's the case, or do you think that these two challenges might have become more distinctly Colorado-esque than maybe the rest of the challenges this season?
Yeah, I felt the Quickfire and the Elimination Challenge were very Colorado-y. The first one, the Quickfire, we were in a saloon and cooking with some old stuff and some, what's it called?
Sarsaparilla.
Sarsaparilla, something I've never heard of, never tried.
Oh, really?
What? That's
why
crazy
have you?
Talk.
I've heard of sarsaparilla. I've never tried it. Jim, I'm assuming you obviously have the much more advanced palate considering that is your job, but I'm assuming you both have heard of and tried sarsaparilla.
Yes. And I'm a fan. It's very much like root beer. So it is a little bit more herbaceous than root beer, and it can be made in different ways. Like it can be made into tea, which is definitely not like root beer, but imagine a root beer, sort of like a little bit like a ginger beer, root beer kind of thing going on.
Okay, then I probably would be very DTF with that. You have to remember up here, we just put maple syrup on everything and call it a day.
Yes, can't wait until, I don't know, I haven't watched Top Chef Canada. I don't know how many maple syrup quick fires they do every season. I'm assuming about 9 or so, since that's, as you said, the only ingredient that I guess you use up there. Just kidding. We love all of our Canadian listeners and, of course, our Canadian podcasters. But let's get into the episode proper. Actually, before we do that, Jim, it's been a little bit since we've talked to you last, you know, since Restaurant Wars. We've seen the 1-2 punch that was Joe Flam and Fatima, even though Joe Flam's going to come back this episode. You know, we saw Bruce go home. What have been your thoughts, of this past group of episodes leading into the finals? How have you thought the season has progressed since that really big, fiery watermark that was Restaurant Wars in the middle of the season?
You know, I've got to say that Restaurant Wars doesn't feel like the middle of the season anymore. It feels like it's Restaurant Wars finale. I mean, I don't know if it seemed that way to y'all, but for me, it was like, wasn't Restaurant Wars just on and now they're calling Telluride the finale? I think it's awesome. I think that everybody's been doing really well. Of course, I was devastated to see Bruce go. I was certainly rooting for him. And I think that Bruce, I think on Bruce's exit, he may have gotten a little bit of a bad rap and people thinking that he wasn't in it. I've got to say that I can guarantee 100% that Bruce was in it. I think y'all were mentioning that last week. Like he may have seemed a little bit deflated in his interviews and his talking heads, but you got to know his heart was in it to win it.
Now, speaking towards the talking heads, I know you spoke to myself and last week's guest, Rourke Luskin, about this a little bit. I know we had asked sort of out loud, opined on when do they do the confessional cycles for Top Chef? And as a former contestant, you probably have the best insight as to when exactly that falls in terms of the scheduling.
Yeah, the confessionals are always running, and you do it almost every day. You're taken away to talk to the camera. And certainly when something happens that is emotional or affects you, you go immediately to confessionals and you get asked a bunch of questions. And there's a reason why it looks like people are about to break down when they get voted off. It's because you are literally like, you hear pack your knives and go, and then you're taken immediately to sit in front of a camera. Like, you change clothes and then you sit in front of a camera, and there's probably 10 minutes in between that. So when you're eliminated, you get that raw emotion of being kicked out, caught on camera, and it is painful. But the confessionals happen throughout the season. It's always part of your job. You're always doing it. And whenever there's free time, you know, whenever you have free time for the production crew, you are sitting in the confessional answering questions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you do something and you go to confessional, much like in the real world. So does Top Chef function. Well, let's get into Telluride here. First, we find out some interesting stuff from Carrie in particular. We're finding out bits and pieces about Carrie's sort of Colorado origin story. And Haley, true to the Winter Olympics, very timely, Carrie wanted to be a skier. And that's the reason she initially moved to Colorado.
That is a feeling I know nothing about. Skiing has never compelled me, nor has the world of athletics. But that's why Carrie and I are very different people.
Well, to be fair, she very quickly steered away from steered her skis away towards the skiing world and decided, you know, I've decided to go into cooking. Though, again, she sort of draws some interesting parallels here where she says, you know, I worked in an environment where everyone was bigger than me and had fancier equipment. And now she sort of feels like the same thing's going on with Top Chef. And there's a moment where I think we can definitely talk about why Carrie is still sort of getting this underdog edit. But let's segue into the chefs. Get into their suite at the Madeline Hotel. Haley, maybe I misheard this. I don't know if you picked this up. Did Chris, when he was talking about like how he was able to luxuriate in the hotel suite, did he say, might as well had Rourke there busting open the damn shutters for you? I thought I heard Rourke's name in there. Maybe it was subliminal because she was on the podcast last week, but I could be mistaken.
Yeah, I think that might have been subliminal. I don't remember hearing that comment.
I will tell you 100% that in the subtitles, like I watched the, I leave the subtitling on when I watch TV. It did in fact say Rourke. And I think it was a Fantasy Island reference. And I really couldn't remember. Is there a Rourke on Fantasy Island?
Yeah, I remember Tattoo. That's the only like character I remember from Fantasy Island. But yeah, that I thought that was odd because, I mean, Rourke Luskin is really the only person I know named Rourke. Now that I'm looking it up, yeah, it looks like there is a character named so it's Ricardo Montalban's role. It was the main guy was named Mr.
Oh, okay.
That is really funny.
But for some reason, all I remember is Tattoo. And yeah, very ironic timing that we have Rourke Luskin on the podcast last week, and then she incidentally gets name drop on Top Chef much earlier than any one of us did, except for obviously you, Jim. But the chefs.
Excuse me, I was on Top Chef before Jim was.
That's true. You were on Top Chef before. You can hold that above him at least. Well, let's get into the new Sheridan Saloon here. The chefs, as requested, come thirsty. And I don't know if their thirst would necessarily be quenched here by the return of... Well, actually, before we get into that, I guess we should get into the quickfire itself a bit, because the chefs have no idea that the Last Chance Kitchen returnee is going to be incorporated into this challenge. But at first glance, it's just, okay, you're going to create a gastropub-inspired dish featuring sarsaparilla, and gastropub truly in the essence of guest judge for both challenges in this episode, Wiley Dufresne. Jim, what do you think of Wiley Dufresne as a chef, and how much? I know he's been like sort of a big megalith in the cooking world in terms of being quite a game changer in some of these cooking methods.
I really have a huge admiration for Wiley Dufresne. I follow for sure the Deuce Donuts is freaking awesome. I was so bummed to hear about WD-50 shutting down. I think he had some landlord disputes. But one of the best meals I've ever had came from WD-50 12 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Haley, do you have any experience with, I know you watch all these cooking shows, with Wiley Dufresne on those shows, or just hearing about him via Top Chef?
I can't pinpoint a certain moment. I'm not always great with names on these shows because I watch so many of them in a short amount of time that everyone kind of gets muddled together. So I don't really have any background on him.
Well, I guess then we'll sort of have someone who knows him very well and someone who doesn't. It's a great way to sort of gain some insight into Wiley Dufresne from multiple angles. So each chef basically gets to pick a sweetener, a fruit, a protein, and a vegetable. They don't know that they're only going to be holding on to those ingredients for so long. But Haley, at first glance, how did you feel about this challenge? It's one of the more simpler ideas for a quick fire. Just, hey, you know, sarsaparilla was known to exist back in the frontier times. Let's cook a dish using sarsaparilla with a limited set of ingredients.
I thought it was great. I thought it was fun. I love when these things are simple but have a clear focus, which was the sarsaparilla. So I was really excited to see what they came up with.
Mm-hmm. Jim, you expressed your love for sarsaparilla beforehand. Is it a very versatile ingredient? Do you feel like it was a good sort of mystery variable, a glue that you could sort of throw into a dish in order to hold it together?
Yeah, I think it is, but it's also very specific. I don't know if y'all have ever tried cooking like with Coke or Dr. Pepper. Lots of people do that kind of thing. It's really much more difficult than you might think, because once you start reducing it, it starts, the sugars start concentrating even more and it gets sticky. So yeah, it's really interesting. It's challenging, and you do have to be creative to incorporate those flavors. And I will say that I did freeze frame the shot of the sarsaparilla on the screen, and they did have sarsaparilla tea and just raw sarsaparilla root to use as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm trying to figure out, I guess it seemed like they all just ended up using the liquid sarsaparilla, which I'm assuming has more ingredients in it as well than, you know, just the root. But I suppose they were sort of just figuring out how exactly to use it. So they all pick their ingredients. They have four each, but they have one sort of Butch Cassidy-esque figure running through to pilfer ingredients from everybody. It's the return of our last chance Kitcher contender. As I mentioned before, it is Joe Flam who ends up defeating Brother, even though the show made it believe that it was between Brother and Joe and Bruce, even though as Rourke unfortunately figured out by watching the second part first last week, Bruce was eliminated in the first part of last week's finale. First, I want to get your thoughts, Jim. What did you think about Joe Flam as a returnee from Last Chance Kitchen? Were you surprised at all with the fact that he was very quickly back from when he got out a couple rounds ago?
No, I don't think so. I think that he has shown all season that he is really very capable and is very versatile as a chef, and is very likable too, which I think is important. I do have to say that entrance, I don't know that I've ever seen a Top Chef entrance that was like that. It was like there were smoke machines and the cowboy hat and the backlighting. It was all very, very interesting. I have to say I loved it. Seeing Joe walk through the Western style doors really cracked me up.
Oh yeah, I loved how you mentioned the smoke machine. I loved how dusty it seems to be in there, and hopefully that was just an effect and that, you know, the saloon doesn't need to be in health violations at all. But I love those effects because, like you said, they very rarely do it, because when does Top Chef ever really do a cowboy thing? Haley, I know that we had both predicted that Flam was probably going to edge out Brother in Last Chance Kitchen last week. But do you feel bad for Brother? Let's sort of, I guess, eulogize Brother a bit now that he hasn't officially come back to the show. I mean, I can't imagine how painful it must be to make it all those rounds into Last Chance Kitchen and then just to barely lose out on it at the very end, right before you got to the finish line. I know Kwame, when he got eliminated before we had the double buyback and Claudia and Leanne, said like this was the worst place to go out. Do you feel like Brother felt the same way?
You mean barely lose? Yeah, it sucks a lot, but that's just kind of the mechanics of the show. If you go out early, you have to fight harder than anyone else has to fight. And we kind of thought that Joe had a really good chance of coming back just based on his pedigree. Brother was a little mad at us for that comment. Sorry, Brother. But it was interesting. I liked the fact that we didn't really know who it was going to be until they really panned up to his face. Like, I feel like in a lot of seasons, you can be like, oh, it's a tiny woman versus a large man. You can tell who it is when they're walking. But it was like, hey, it was three big guys. So it's hard to tell until you see their face.
Yeah, they definitely benefited from the body type there. I also find it interesting, Jim, because I feel like had Brother come back, it would be the first time in a while that we've seen someone who got eliminated, you know, mid-season or earlier come back. Because we've had, you know, Kristen Kish and Lewis from New Orleans back to back, going kind of mid game and then coming back. But the past few seasons, it's been, you know, Doug got eliminated at Final Five, then came back. You had Amar get eliminated at Final Five, then come back. Brooke got eliminated at Final Four and immediately come back. Do you think we're ever going to see again the person who gets eliminated earlier on in the season and then just crushes LCK to come back to the competition at the very end?
I mean, it is possible, but it is so hard to do. I think that there was a season, the guy got the very first season of Last Chance Kitchen, I think it was, where the guy got eliminated very early in the season and made it all the way to the end. But that is just, it's really so hard to do. No, I think you're much more likely to win Last Chance Kitchen if you were out late in the game.
Mm-hmm. So let's get into Joe Flam's role in this challenge as well. As a latecomer, he gets to steal one ingredient from each person's dish. So actually, he's going to end up with four ingredients, while as everyone else is going to end up with three. Haley, how did you feel about this as a game mechanic? Did it make things too unfair for the other chefs for Joe to come in and take some of their stuff?
I would say it was only unfair for Carrie, who lost her protein, but I felt like it was very thematic with what was going on. Like, it was very like, the saloon, we're gonna rob things because that's what we do in the Old West.
I didn't realize all the cowboys were such nerds, according to you, Haley. So Joe Flam is able to take, as you mentioned, Carrie's pork, Chris's berries, Joe's carrots, and Adrian's brown sugar. Both Carrie and Joe Stash are pretty, and I guess I have to go back to Joe Stash now, because once again we have two Joes back in the competition. But they're both a little miffed about it, because I think both of them were planning to have that be the center of their dish, but they decide to rally and move forward. I did love, Jim, you talked about sort of the fun effects of the swinging saloon doors. I also love them getting to cook out in the middle of the town square. Granted, I can only imagine how hot it must have been under that blazing sun, but all that being said, I thought it was a really fun effect to sort of be cooking in the middle of this, you know, antique Western town.
Yeah, I thought that was really awesome. I did check out the new Sheridan Saloon. It is connected to the new Sheridan Hotel, which was established in 1895. And they do have two restaurants and a rooftop bar in that establishment. So there were places for them to cook inside. But I just think it was so gorgeous. Like, when they walked outside and you see the table set up in the middle of the street, and it was just such an amazing shot with the mountains in the background and the old West feel, kind of like a shootout, you know, like when you call someone out for a draw, you know, you walk out in the middle of the street and that's where it goes down. So I thought it was really cool.
Yeah, that's what Haley was doing with Brother earlier when she made that comment towards him.
Pew, 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 pew.
Well, let's get into the dishes themselves here, as everyone sort of gives their own take on a sarsaparilla-inspired dish. Haley, any of these dishes stand out to you personally for any good reasons or bad?
I mean, I love fish, so the halibut crudo would be delicious. But I think my favorite would have been Carrie's top of the French onion soup. That sounds so freaking delicious. I love French onion soup, and this sounds amazing, and I want to try that.
Yeah, let's talk about this a bit, because I know this is something that Kemper Boyd on Twitter talked to you and I about, Haley. This feels like the second episode in the past few to have, okay, Carrie's going to go for something a little more simpler but creative with this. I love how she titles everything, too. I find that very fun. This was top of the French onion soup.
And Padma was like a crustini with mushrooms. She's like, no, top of the French onion soup, my friend.
Yes, buy into this narrative, Padma. Come on, where's your sense of creativity? But then we get this shot of the Joes sort of whispering to each other, specifically Joe Sasto saying, like, she can't win again with effing tartines. And look, she does. And I really,
Joe Stash.
I mean, we also, we had to assume that was the case, because again, as I talked about last week, Joe Stash really does seem to get the edit where if he says something, the exact opposite is going to happen. But Jim, what do you make of this moment and this idea of maybe tying into Carrie's overall winner edit? Why do you think that Joe Stash was still sort of counting her out to this point, despite the fact that she is one of the most adorned contestants this season in terms of wins?
I think it's just a little bit of a matter of frustration from Joe. Like, he is no doubt hyper-talented and really creative. And I think that Carrie is stealing a little bit of that creativity from him. And I think that he feels that the fact that it happens so often on Toast, it really just sort of irks him. And I think it's funny. And you're absolutely right. He's definitely getting that edit where whatever he says, the opposite happens. And I just find it kind of humorous at this point. It's almost a good predictor of what's going to happen in the show.
Haley, how do you feel about it?
I want to start calling Joe Flam the Shady Joe, because it always seems like when there's some background whispering going on, he's involved.
Yeah, such a gossipy Joe.
Gossip Joe. XOXO, Gossip Joe.
I love that. And there's a rhyme scheme, too. And now we can finally differentiate them without calling him Babyface Joe or Big Tall Joe or whatever you want to necessarily call him. Jim, did you have any highlights or lowlights from the dishes in this quickfire challenge?
Yeah, I too would also really want to eat the crudo. I think that they made it sound so good, the coconut and sarsaparilla. I noticed it looked like in the picture there was celery leaf and cucumber in there as well. And I'm really curious to see how the lime and maple combination worked with all that other stuff. That to me seemed the most interesting. And for sure, I would eat the heck out of Chris's country fried steak.
Yeah, I was about to say that would probably be my dish, just because I love me some country fried or chicken fried steak, especially coming from someone like Chris, where that sort of is in his wheelhouse. And the sarsaparilla crunchy gravy sounds good. I know that Kirk Clark would probably put the fennel salad away to the side. But yeah, that really sort of hit like the next nice Western pang in my heart that hopefully didn't mean I need to go to the heart doctor anytime soon. But the bottoms are Adrian in this challenge and Joe Flam. Basically, they both sort of fail in that they don't really highlight the sarsaparilla in their dish. They sort of just say, okay, I guess I need to throw it in there. But it ends up that Carrie takes the win here for her toast dish and prompts Joe to actually literally go, toast? Toast? Again? And look, I know how people can get frustrated with this sometimes kind of hipstery semi-douchey attitude that Joe Stash has, but if he's sort of going to be like this Skeletor-esque villain that gets his comeuppance each and every time that Carrie wins, I'm kind of here for it, Haley, edit-wise.
Yeah, I am too, because I love Carrie, and Joe has such a villain mustache, so how could you just not put him in that role?
Absolutely. I feel like the look unfortunately informs, you know, the role he's going to sort of be cast in this show. Let's move on to our elimination challenge here, as it's revealed they're getting high, but not in the way that we were going to believe. I looked at this a little bit on Reddit. I believe that they actually might have tried to do a marijuana-based challenge, as Rourke really wanted to, and not the Fantasy Island Rourke. Though, who knows, maybe Fantasy Island involved much more consumption of illegal things than we initially thought. But apparently they were going to try to go for a marijuana challenge, and I don't think that they could get it past standards and practices. So euphemisms, I'm guessing, incorporated into this. Jim, what did you think about this challenge? This idea that, okay, we're going to go 12,000 feet in the air. And honestly, the concept of this challenge is make a dish at a high altitude, incorporating a baked element into it.
I think this is awfully late in the game for one of these challenges where it puts you so far out of your element. It's almost like cooking outside. And this one to me seemed really difficult. It was nice that they allowed them to go home and practice, which never happens. And so I thought that was kind of interesting, but I thought it was awesome. Alpino Vino looked like it's about to fall off that mountain at any second, and it just seems totally amazing. And, you know, the marijuana puns are, you know, I guess worth it if they couldn't get a marijuana episode in. You know, there are crazy, like, high food, like, upscale food marijuana meals happening in places where it is legal. So, like, California and Colorado, there are lots of really talented chefs doing marijuana meals, sort of cooking with it and pairing it the same way you would with wine. It's all really interesting to me. We'll see how that works in the future. Very interesting.
Yeah, I saw earlier on in the episode when Padma was talking about Butch Cassidy's like 21,000 bounty, we got to see like a glimmer in Joe Stash's eyes with the ching sound effect. I'm pretty sure that was cut out, that Joe Stash had that glimmer in his eye when they said, okay, you're going to be getting high, because I think he is someone who flat out said last episode, I don't remember my dreams because I smoke a lot of pot. So I'm sure Haley, as soon as he heard he was going to Colorado, he was really itching to do something. And unfortunately, this was not the getting high he wanted to.
Yeah, he was probably very disappointed that no pot challenge came out.
Yeah, the cooking with different pots as he has over the course of the season. Like you said, Jim, I do like the fact that they were able to test things at home. And I think that had they not, a much, much worse caliber of food would have come across on the plate. And I wonder if one of the reasons why I actually think they talked about this on the show that, oh, they did so well because they were able to practice beforehand. I wonder, Haley, a little bit of like tinfoil hat. Do you think that because of, again, Tom calling them out a couple of rounds ago, they said, OK, let's handicap them a bit by making sure that they know what they're doing and have them try cooking beforehand in this little, you know, hotel suite kitchen in the current altitude that they're in?
No, I think I feel like this would have always been in plan. If they just kind of threw them in to baking at a high altitude without practicing, that would have felt very like Cutthroat Kitchen to me. And as much as I love that show, it's not the same show as Top Chef. And Top Chef, they aren't trying to trick you. They are trying to get you to create the best food possible. But it does have a twist. And I thought it was a really interesting twist. One that I kind of forgot about because I am not much of a science gal, nor am I a big cooking gal. I'm more of an eating person myself.
Alton Brown is shook, Haley.
I know. But I really love this challenge and I thought it was interesting and it was very Colorado. Like that is a thing that they have to deal with in Colorado.
Mm-hmm. Jim, was your fellow season 14 compatriot Casey probably getting some PTSD considering that I believe in season 3 it was her own altitude sickness that kind of did her in when they went to Aspen for the finals?
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it. And that's when they had to actually cook in the gondolas, right?
Yeah, I believe so. Which, yeah, talk about your harrowing sets of finals. I believe that was one of them. And poor Casey. I give all the kudos to like her and Angelo for mustering through illnesses to be able to cook, especially at that altitude. So the interesting thing as well is in addition to them being able to bake beforehand, we also do have a sort of judges walkthrough here with Tom, Wiley Dufresne, and guest judge Paul Liebrandt. Jim, do you have any knowledge of Paul Liebrandt? I don't know if it's as cohesive as Wiley Dufresne, but I mean, we'll talk about his fashion sense later. The dude, if he cooks as well as he dresses, it must be impeccable.
Look, Paul Liebrandt is definitely, in my opinion, one of the best chefs in the country. And I don't know if he just got sort of a sketchy edit or, you know, I know he's kind of a weird dude. Like, I don't mean that in a bad way. Like, I know that he's hyper intense about his food. He may be a little bit difficult to work for, but I don't know if y'all not seen A Matter of Taste where he's the star and it's about opening up Corton and it's all about his dealings with restaurant critics and just getting this restaurant open to the place where he wants it to be. It is really an awesome documentary. It's really cool. And I want to say that he may have been the youngest 3 Michelin star chef ever. At like in his young 20s, he got 3 Michelin stars. And I think that begrudgingly, some of the other New York chefs like to throw some shade his direction, specifically Adrian's mentor. So I think that he's a very interesting guy. I would love to hang out with him. I know people who have said that the meals that they've had at his restaurants have been life-changing. So he's definitely fits the bill as a qualified judge for Top Chef.
Haley, are you adding A Matter of Taste now to your queue to watch next?
Yeah, right after X on the Beach, I still have a couple seasons to watch of that.
Oh, good. I'm sure Paul Liebrandt would love that he is behind watching the frolickings of youths in on the other side of the pond. The other thing about Paul Liebrandt that was interesting that I saw some chef detectives calling out a bit on various social media is I believe Paul Liebrandt was sort of talking, but kept saying, OK, I cooked at this restaurant at 18,000 feet in the Alps. But after some research, I'm pretty sure the math is a little off on that because I think the highest mountain at all in Europe is 15,000. So maybe he like got his numbers mixed up. Maybe he was thinking like 1800 meters or something. I'm not entirely sure, but I mean, Haley, it is still pretty staggering to cook even at an altitude of like 15,000 feet.
Absolutely. That's wild. And not Wiley.
Jim, do you have any experience cooking at altitude?
None. Zero. It would totally terrify me. I know everything takes longer to cook. You know, baking has got to be incredibly difficult. It's all, I think it's just something that requires practice. And to be thrown into this situation would terrify me.
Yeah, I mean, since you are sort of the seafood expert of Alabama, I'm assuming cooking at sea level is probably your area of expertise.
Yes, I'm way more comfortable at sea level.
Well, and in all of this that's going on, we do get a little soundbite from the aforementioned Adrian. And she sort of has been talking about this the past couple episodes about how, you know, I want to channel the voices of all the chefs that I've worked with into one dish, but I'm sort of realizing that I've been cooking their food when I should be cooking my food. And as a result, she's been on a bit of a tear. She hasn't won anything yet, which again is a little surprising given this edit. But Haley, do you make anything of sort of the new attitude of Adrian at this point?
Yeah, it's really exciting. I love seeing her rebirth as a chef on her own on this show. And I think we could all say in the nicest way possible that we are pretty surprised that she made it to the final four. But it's really interesting to see what she's been able to do.
Yeah. Jim, what are your thoughts on Adrian's arc here?
I think Adrian's arc is awesome. Like, I think she's totally great. I'm surprised that she hasn't gotten this win yet. Like, I can't, like, so I was like, okay, she's totally going to win this episode. But I do have to say that this dish that she made to me seems very much Le Bernardin, which is great. But I mean, I have some issues with the dish too. We can talk about that, right? I guess right now, if you're interested. But you know, she did this. She did spheres on this dish, and to me, spheres are a lot like foam in that they were kind of cool 15 years ago, but now are just kind of lame, and people like roll their eyes. And I'm really surprised that between Paul and Wiley that they didn't give her didn't roast her for this. I mean, this is kind of it's kind of cool, but it's a really simple technique. It's not like it's a hard technique. You just melt agar into whatever you're trying to suspend, and then you drip it into cold oil. And it's kind of interesting, but for me, it's way more on the lame side of things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm assuming they tried to roast Adrian, but because they were at such a high altitude, it took longer than expected to do so.
Yeah, some of that may have gotten edited out. Like, you could see the other people at the table and Adrian kind of laugh when Wiley talks about he understands what agar suspensions are. So it was, I don't know. I'm surprised she didn't get nailed for it. But I think that whenever Wiley is on this show, it's more times, like, if I were cooking for Wiley, I would not use any modern technique. I would just try to be creative with ingredients that we wouldn't normally use together, instead of trying to use some sort of modernist technique, which in reality is no longer modernist. It's just kind of lame.
No, well, that's so interesting, though, because that actually parlays really nicely to what's going on with Carrie, where Carrie says, you know, I wanted to make, you know, a beef Wellington, but then I realized, oh, crap, I can't make a beef Wellington for Paul Liebrand, especially if I've never made one at a high altitude. And so she sort of strays away from it, which actually disappoints Paul Liebrand. I mean, you've been a former contestant. How much do you think of sometimes about, like, okay, this person is a guest judge, let me try to not make this thing for this person because they're inevitably going to compare it against, you know, what's in their wheelhouse?
For me, there is a real strategy in not only picking the dishes that you make, but in choosing what to call them. And you see Joe Stash get caught up in this a little bit. But the second she said beef Wellington to the judges, her dish needed to resemble beef Wellington. I mean, I wrote down, like, when I was writing down what her dish was, I wrote not beef Wellington. And to everyone who was in the room, she, you know, her dish was good, but it wasn't beef Wellington, and that, which is what they clearly all wanted. And Paul Liebrand, I'm sure, could execute an awesome beef Wellington, but you would never in a million years see a straight up beef Wellington on his menu, like in Hell's Kitchen or like a Gordon Ramsay restaurant. His menus are just traditionally way more out there and creative. So I think that she should have just gone for it.
Haley, what do you think about Carrie's sort of audible that she calls here? She has some clarity, or I guess some carity, into the issue overnight and decides to change course. But do you think that was the right decision?
I thought Joe stole the carrots. So I get why she did it. She was nervous, you know, she'd never done it. She was cooking for an English dude. But what Carrie has done so well and what has gotten her here is her conviction in her food, and where she's just been like, yeah, I know this is maybe a little weird, but I'm just going to do it. Like the Hasselhoff back potato, like, what the hell is that? But she was like, I'm just going to do it. I'm going to go for it. And she doubted herself for a second there. And I think that's what led her to be in the bottom.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think her lucid dreams betrayed her after, you know, she made such a big deal out of them last episode. But I guess her dreams are sort of, I don't know, self-sabotaging her by saying, like, no, you don't want to make the Beef Wellington. You should make this. But let's go further up the runtime of this episode as the chefs go further up in altitude here as they start cooking things. We get a few things here and there, but, you know, as we'll go through the dishes, we can definitely talk through the trials and tribulations that come with it. First, I will say, I am surprised, again, going back to this Casey thing, that neither the chefs nor the judges really had any bad experience with altitude sickness. Maybe after everything that happened with Leanne, the producers made sure that like wasn't the case. But I'm surprised, Jim, with how high up they were, that nobody was, you know, everyone was able to enjoy themselves and the meals in front of them without necessarily needing to succumb to altitude sickness.
Is it sort of like the bins? Like, they have been acclimating to higher altitudes all season. So, I mean, maybe the sort of slow ascent, like, into Colorado, and then they have been saying really kind of like gradually higher up on the mountains as the season has progressed. Maybe they're just more getting used to it.
And there's also meds you can take to fight altitude sickness. I've had them before where you just, if you're feeling a little woozy, you take it and you're kind of fine. So I wonder if they had those like a plethora of those kicking around rather than weed. Or maybe they had weed. I don't know. Does that help with altitude sickness?
It helps with a lot of things. But for this next quickfire challenge, you'll be cooking a dish that features Dramamine, just because we are not feeling very good today. I also want to talk about, this is something that the internet populace was talking about a bit. Haley, did you notice Gail's wardrobe at the judges' table?
Oh my God. Did she look like a majestic angel? Oh my God. I love her so much. And she was so beautiful. And she was posting pictures of her outfit in her Instagram stories. And I was like almost in tears. She looked so stunningly beautiful. There was one picture she posted where it kind of looked like it was her and Tom's wedding, which I would be here for. She looked so amazing. And I loved the different aesthetics that Padma and Gail both had. Like, Gail looked like she was like, I'm queen of this effing mountain. And Padma was like, I'm a bougie kid on a ski vacation. I love it. Like, magical outfits this week. Thank you for asking.
I did love Gail's like Narnia realness going on, especially when she like donned that white coat. I was all about it.
She had this updo, and like, I don't know if like, it seemed like she just had this sparkle to her. I might have just been imagining that, but like, it was so striking. I loved it.
Yeah. I don't know what you were taking as you were watching this episode. Maybe you were getting high while they were getting high to see that sparkle. Let's talk about each of these final five dishes here. Let's start off with the returnee, with Joe Flam. He is channeling his time with Art Smith. There's a really fun picture that features the two of them where, even though Art Smith definitely, you know, made him, put him through the ringer in terms of working in his kitchen, they did actually kind of look oddly enough like father and son in that photo. But Joe Flam goes for a buttermilk braised pork loin with pea sorrel puree, a pepper jam, and a goat cheese buttermilk drop biscuit. Again, each of these dishes need to have a baked element in there as well. Joe's going to end up in the top here, but not ultimately win. Jim, were you surprised by that? What did you think about Joe's dish?
I thought this dish looked totally awesome. I would love to taste it. And I could not stop cracking up about how he keeps talking about how Art Smith yells at him all the time. Like, to me, of all the chefs that I can imagine being a yeller, I just had a hard time picturing Art Smith. But it does make sense, I guess, that since in Art's time with Oprah, he's probably in Chicago a lot. I'm not sure if he has an actual restaurant there or not, but I just thought it was hilarious the way Joe kept talking about Art like that.
Yeah, you think he's just going to drop-in visits into random restaurants a la Gordon Ramsay and just start yelling at people?
scold them about their biscuits? Yeah, I mean, it's possible.
Yeah, and as, you know, a biscuit aficionado such as yourself, how do you think Joe Flam's biscuit turned out?
Those biscuits look great, and I think the biscuits are really a smart strategy for altitude. Just because you don't have to rely on Adrian was the only person who actually made a yeasted bread. Everybody else did quick breads, and which I think is the smart way to go. And so those biscuits looked awesome. I don't know if there was some reason, maybe they didn't turn out as well as he wanted, because he only crumbled up tiny little pieces and put it on the top of the dish, almost like a crunch. So he might have had some technical issue there. But to me, they looked good.
Yeah. I mean, It also might have been a little bit of like, considering he got eliminated in the sudden death quickfire because he put, you know, two big florets of cauliflower into his risotto. Maybe he's like, okay, I got to keep things really small so that people don't think it's one thing. Haley, what did you think about Joe Flam's dish here?
Sounds delicious. Looks delicious. I wanted goat cheese biscuit yesterday.
Yeah, the goat cheese biscuit sounds really interesting. I will say that I'm a little, we'll talk about, you know, Joe Stash's win. I'm a little surprised that Joe Flam didn't win here, just because I do think it came down to like him and Adrian, in my opinion. But I feel like Adrian had gotten more critiques than Joe Flam, because I think the only real thing about Joe Flam, like you mentioned, Jim, was, oh, yeah, it was, maybe they should have called the biscuit a crumble. But I feel like that's just a matter of naming things. But again, they'll get surpassed by someone who gets much more critiques against them anyway. So let's move on into Carrie's dish. Again, she completely deviates from her initial beef Wellington idea. She goes for the ribeye with a foie gras, spring veggies, and a honey cornbread. She calls it a tower. I don't know if I'd call it a tower, Haley. I'd call it like a small rise building, if anything.
Yeah, I was going to say like a mid-rise condo, three floors, you know. Still got to pay the condo fees, though. This sounds delicious. I mean, what they said in deliberation was that all of them were so good and they're just like nitpicking. So it's really hard for me as like a basic bitch to be like, no, I don't think that's good. I don't like Wagyu ribeye. It's like, yeah, obviously that sounds effing delicious.
Jim, what are your thoughts towards Carrie's dish here?
I thought it sounded good. Like I paused the screen to take a look at the spring vegetables, and it looked to me like she had carrots, some sort of green bean in there. It looked maybe like even there were some morels and spring onions. So that's a really classic combination of spring type vegetables. I do think that I do understand why the judges are saying it seemed disjoint. For me as a Southerner, when I make cornbread, you can eat it as small little biscuits to accompany things, but more times than not, I want sort of a hunk of it, and then I want to use it to sop up various juices. And usually like black eyed peas and cornbread are super traditional and very old school, but you get that black eyed pea a pot liquor, and it's loaded with tons of flavor, and you just use that to absorb into the cornbread. Another old school thing with cornbread is like you just take your cornbread and you dunk it in buttermilk and you sort of let it halfway disintegrate. That's a very old Southern tradition, which is really good. So for me, cornbread almost needs to be in an area where you sop things. And to me, her dish did not have that. It did just look like the three little ring mold cutouts of cornbread on the side. Although it did look like they were drenched in honey. So it does have a little bit of that going on.
Yeah, Haley, what did you think about the comments at Judge's Table about how, you know, some people thought that Carrie's dish didn't have a distinct theming or point of view? Tom said that it didn't necessarily need a point of view. What are your thoughts towards that?
Gosh, what are my thoughts? I think they were just so disappointed that they didn't get beef Wellington that
exactly.
It was hard for them to really appreciate the cornbread.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. They were just trying to not necessarily say you're in the bottom because you promised us beef Wellington.
Yeah,
you did not deliver, because that would have just been a little bit of a temper tantrum kind of form of reasoning.
I'd be here for it though.
Well, let's move to the bottom of the top, and not only to the top, to the winner of this challenge, which is Joe Stash's duck with spring peas and a cherry jam and a kombucha cherry puff. So yeah, I mentioned this before. I mean, the duck was apparently cooked impeccably. Gail says this might have been one of the best dishes she's had across the entire season. But I'll admit I was a little surprised that it still won, just because, again, I don't know how much they incorporated the baking element into this challenge. But due to the fact that Joe Stash might have had one of the least favorite baking elements and the fact that he still won, I'm just not sure how the criteria balances out there. Haley, what did you think?
I kind of agree with you there. It seemed like everyone was in such a close race that was really, really hard for them to tell like who would win and who would lose. But roasted duck with cherry, oh my God, I want that right now.
Yeah, I do like Wiley sort of brought up that he was going for like the duck and cherry pie feel. And you could definitely get that, even if the profiteroles didn't really come out too well. It was an interesting idea. Jim, what is your thought towards Joe Stash's ultimately winning dish here?
Yeah, I'm with you. I was definitely a little bit surprised because they really hammered the profiterole, both for the filling, which he did use kombucha again in a savory element, which I think is really cool. And they didn't like the way that the dough turned out. So it was really weird for me that he won, but I think that it had to do with like, you could see how perfectly cooked that the the duck was on through the TV screen. And I think it may have had more to do with just that he nailed that so well. And the rest of it worked really well together too. The spring peas and cherry jam, even if they didn't like the execution of the puffs, I was a little surprised, you know. And this is another smart decision. You know, if you're making it's called choux paste or pâte à choux, really it's the basis for all eclairs and croquembouche, and mm-hmm. it's all the same pastry. But it was really smart of him to use this technique, I think, and he made them incredibly small. So if you're worried about things taking a long time to cook, one of the best ways around that is making them really small. And so I think that he did a good job strategically planning out his dish. And I will also say that his not knowing what the exact definition of a profiterole is, it was really good for him to rename, to call it something else. And there is a real strategy involved in this, because you never want to give Tom, you never want to call something a dish and give it to Tom and then Tom be like, this is not this dish. And like we've seen lots of people over the years go home because of that. But you can't really be sent home because you call something a Joe Puff. Right. There's no expectation for what that is. It's just a Joe Puff. And even if it's not executed very well, at least he didn't call it a profiterole. Now, I don't think it was strategically the best idea for him to say, I don't know what a profiterole is.
Yeah.
But it's strategically smart, and it's way strategically better than making not beef Wellington. When you compare those side by side, you can see how important naming or talking to the judges about what you're going to make actually is.
I need from the audience of Top Chef is to Photoshop a picture of Jigglypuff, the Pokemon, with Joe's face on it for a Joe Puff.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, please Photoshop a bowl of Cocoa Puffs, but put Joe's face on the bird and write Joe Puffs on it.
Or have like a bowl of Cocoa Puffs and just put Joe's face on all of the puffs.
Yeah, I think that could actually be the best of all possible worlds. Joe Puffs. I would just love Tom being like, yeah, you know, this wasn't really a Joe Puff. I've had a lot of Joe Puffs in my lifetime, and this just really wasn't one of them.
It was really more of a Paul Puff, honestly.
Let's move into Adrienne's dish here. She goes for a lobster with her mountain bread. You sort of talked about before, Jim, this sort of like Frankenstein yeast bread with a champagne beurre blanc, which she had her own sort of Art Smith-esque discipline of making 25 pounds a day of it, apparently back in the day, with some caviar, really going for the high-end aspect of the elements of their challenge. Haley, what did you think about Adrienne's dish here?
Again, I sound like a broken record. Sounds delicious. I love lobster. I love seafood. This sounds amazing. Champagne is good. I hope she actually used a champagne and not just the sparkling wine and called it a champagne. That bothers me. So I hope it was a champagne. I trust her. I trust her to actually use champagne. Sounds delicious.
Jim, you're our seafood expert. How do you think Adrienne did here with the lobster?
I gotta say, the lobster did look completely perfectly cooked. It looked totally delicious. Lobster and caviar is an amazing traditional complement to each other, and paired with champagne is also very traditional. And I think Wiley was right. She did a good job of reinterpreting it. I think that she did a good job of her just changing from the pandemie to challah. Although on the picture, it looked like that bread was really dense. Gail seemed to like that she made the changes. I'm not sure that it was executed quite as well as it may have seemed. You know, pandemie, her original idea is more like a white bread, like a Pullman. And challah is a traditional Jewish loaf. And there's a little bit of difference. Really, the only difference between them is pandemi is made with milk and butter, and challah is not. It's made with honey and vegetable oil. So, they rewarded her for changing in the moment. And everyone seemed to love the dish. It seemed like that they were willing to accept this. It looked really dense on TV. It didn't look like a light, fluffy piece of bread. So
yeah, just like the act of climbing a mountain. It's a very dense, hard activity. So I guess it represents it well. And I do wonder if one of the reasons why Adrienne's dish might have fallen out of favor is because Tom was really adamant about how he felt like this was a competent and well done dish, but it wasn't very exciting. And, you know, he does sort of pull a lot of weight considering he is the head judge. So even though I thought it was a really well done dish overall, maybe it's because Tom's comments sort of held weight, much like Adrian's bread, Haley, that maybe she didn't end up getting the win here.
Mike, you were fired.
Well, let's, you know what else is on fire? The crispiness.
Stop.
The crispiness of Chris's black pepper quail skin with corn pudding, butternut squash, and maple and bacon cornbread. So, Jim, I don't know what it is. Chris being in the last spot here has not worked out well for him for the past couple weeks. Maybe he should not be batting cleanup. But all that aside, how do you feel like Chris's dish came out here?
You know, I think that his dish solved the problem that was Carrie had with her cornbread being disjointed. His, the cornbread you could see was part of the dish, and it was designed to soak up and like draw in that corn pudding, which I think was a great strategy. I mean, what can you say? He overcooked the quail. I mean, at one point, Tom said it was overcured, and that's what they were saying led to the saltiness of it. And then it was overcooked at the same time, which, you know, was clearly just an issue of him not knowing the right way to cook it at altitude. So he was really put in a bad place, I think, because quail. I love quail. It's one of my favorite things to cook, and fried quail is awesome. But those quail legs are so tiny. He was exactly right. You know, quail only usually takes maybe a minute and a half, 2 minutes in the fryer at most. And it was just a bummer to see him go. I got to say that I really love hearing him and Adrian talk about Southern food in this episode. Yeah. I thought they did a really great job. And this dish to me rings true 100% Southern food.
Yeah, it's interesting. So when you're talking about like the overcuring or the overcooking, did that time in the fryer have anything to do with that perspectively, or do you think it was just a matter of his actual preparation before popping it into the fryer?
I think it was both. I think that if he left it too long in a brine, especially if it was a salty type of brine, they didn't really show what it was, but if the brine was overly seasoned and then it's fried too long and then you have to season it again when it comes out of the fryer, it's an easy protein, I think, in this instance to mess up. But when you cook quail in a restaurant, it's usually very forgiving because, you know, quail is one of those birds that you want to eat on the less done side. It's not like chicken where it has to be hammered to 165 degrees. So I think he just left it in the fryer too long because he was trying to overcompensate for the altitude.
Haley, what do you think about Chris's dish?
Again, sounds delicious. Sign me up for maple bacon cornbread. Oh, my
God. Yes. Yes, that might be like of all the things in these five dishes, that would probably be the thing that I want to try first. I would not be surprised if it's on the menu at Butterfunk Kitchen, if he was inspired to do so. I know that he said it's a recipe that's been in his family for years, and I know he really embraces family to the point of where he has pictures of his family up in his restaurant. So that sounds fantastic. And it seems like of the five baked parts of the dishes, he might have pulled his off the best, which again goes back to this sort of odd rubric of things where, you know, even though he baked maybe the best part, it sort of failed on the other components. But we can talk about the judging decision in a little bit. I want to talk about Joe Stash's win once again, because again, a bit of a surprise to all three of us, but Joe Stash has won four elimination challenges. Him and Carrie are by far the leaders in terms of elimination wins. I mean, at this point, again, it can still be anyone's game, and Top Chef has never really shown itself to have the sort of like typical winners edit that you might see in another reality show. I might have to put in a chalk pick for a Joe Stash versus Carrie finale. Jim, where do you stand on that?
I think that would be an awesome finale. I would love to see that, especially with all the one-sided smack talk that's been going on the
yes.
season.
Yeah, maybe that's why it's being shown, is so they could get the ultimate showdown. Haley, what are you thinking about Joe Stash's sort of momentum here? Do you think there's a chance that he could be making the finale now?
Absolutely, I do. And I completely agree with you. I was going to say I could absolutely, based on editing, and like you said, Top Chef editing doesn't always fall in line with the other conventions of reality TV show editing. But I could absolutely see a Carrie Joe finale with Carrie taking it because Joe underestimates what she's capable of doing.
Yeah, and that would be a lot of fun as well, because again, Carrie has sort of been shown from the very beginning to be this underdog, and it would be the ultimate underdog victory to have her, you know, take it home. And I would say that I guess the two of them right now, I would call the front runners just in terms of pure challengers. I know Dylan 1066 sends us that great graphic every week, and I know that the two Joes are actually kind of tied in terms of balancing how many times they finish in the top versus the bottom. But
should Joe Flam also lose some points in that because he legitimately went home one week?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you could say that, but you could also argue that Joe Stash should have gone home in his place as well.
I would love to argue that. No, I'm just kidding.
You could definitely count that against him. But I mean, it's really hard to ignore Joe Stash's four elimination wins, especially two in a row. I know we were definitely predicting, like, could Adrian be the one to turn on and pull off a string of wins at the very end? But it seems like Joe Stash is sort of usurping that position, Jim.
But Adrian might have, like, a goat farmer's trajectory where she doesn't win anything the entire time and then just like wins out at the end.
Yeah, I could definitely see that too. And she's making gumbo next week.
Oh boy. We shall see what 90 minute gumbo will provide. And not a 90 minute episode of Top Chef, but it'll still be on usual time of 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central on Bravo. Watch what happens.
Or if you're in Canada, still 10 p.m.
Yes. Thank you, Haley, for clarifying for our non-American listeners. Let's get to the elimination here as well. It comes down to Chris versus Carrie. And again, I was a little surprised here, not necessarily by the elimination, but by the way judges were kind of phrasing things. Haley, it seemed like, you know, between this and RuPaul's Drag Race airing a couple of hours beforehand, where the person eliminating says one thing completely. In this case, the judges say, well, you know, this case, you know, the person, you need to take risk. You need to push yourself to go a little bit higher. And this person just didn't really take a risk by Chris. It felt a little off-putting considering that I feel like what it came down to for Chris versus Carrie was, again, this traditional Top Chef dilemma of here's one chef who cooked a better dish, but it wasn't adhering to necessarily what the challenge was, versus one chef who really took the risk, but it didn't pay off as well.
Yeah, I had a really stressful Thursday night in the television world. I had RuPaul's Drag Race, where the love of my life, Trixie Mattel, bombed. I had Bachelor Winter Games, where, spoiler alert, Canadian love of my life, Benoit, left because Claire wanted to make out with a German dude. And then Top Chef, where love of my life, Chris, left. It was a tough night for me.
Yeah, very tough night for you.
It was very hard for me going into deliberation to even have a guess at who was in the bottom, who was at the top. Like, I feel like we could have made justifications why Chris and Carrie were actually the top and, you know, Adrian and Joe were the bottom. Like, it just, we could have made any justification for why anyone was good or bad or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Jim, where do you come down on this? I mean, who do you think, obviously we're not tasting the food, but between, you know, someone who takes a risk and misses versus someone who hits but didn't really take a chance, who do you think should have gotten the axe here?
Well, I think it all depends. Because we don't really taste it. I mean, to me, the dish that had the most technical issue was Chris because of all the comments they made about the quail, the protein being overcured and overcooked, overcured and overcooked. And so I think that maybe they couched it in terms of the way that they normally do it about risk taking. But the reality is, I think that Chris made a mistake and it sucks and it's heartbreaking, but I think that he made a mistake that was bigger than Carrie's not Beef Wellington.
Yeah. I do think that maybe they didn't highlight some of the bigger mistakes on Chris's dish. Maybe it's because they enjoyed it more. Maybe it's just because they want to sort of keep everything in the positive boat. You know, when they come back, Tom says this is some of the best food we've had all season. And it really seems like they have sort of hit a new height in terms of cooking and creativity and inspiration and all that, which is good. I think that's perfect for the end game. You know, it's better that they hit their low point a few rounds before the end game than them doing it now. But unfortunately, we say goodbye to Chris here. Haley, eulogize Chris for me a bit. I feel like starting off the season, he was definitely the front runner coming in with this Amish soul, with the chow chow. And he really had sort of, I think, a little bit more of an up and down game than we initially would think, especially in those middle stages.
I really loved Chris as a character on the show. He was almost like the human embodiment of comfort food. Like whenever he was on the screen, I just felt like warm and good. And I thought he made some really interesting things throughout. He had some struggles. He had some ups and downs, like you said, but he really triumphed in a personal way. And I loved seeing the way he went out. He wasn't disappointed himself. He was very happy. You know, he reached his goal of being on Top Chef and he made it really far and he should be super proud of himself. And I think he is. And he got tickets to the Super Bowl where his Eagles won.
Oh my God, that's insane. First of all, like, small chance of him going to the Super Bowl when his team is playing, specifically the Philadelphia Eagles. You could argue even, I don't know football, but you could argue even smaller chance that they would beat the New England Patriots. So for him to be there while the Eagles won was just, I'm sure, a once in a lifetime moment. And I'm so happy that the stars aligned in order for him to get there. Jim, do you have any final words for Chris here?
Yeah, it is a shame that Chris is in the position where Last Chance Kitchen, he basically gets screwed by Last Chance Kitchen in that he doesn't get a second chance, even though people who, you know, went out just right before him do. So it is kind of a shame, but, you know, he should be very proud. And it sounded to me like he was proud. I know that his food is awesome. I know that there are, in order to get a table at his restaurant, you have to wait in line for hours. I know that I'm super excited to meet Chris, to do an event with him, to eat at his restaurant. I think that he is an amazing guy. The embodiment of comfort food, I think, is really a great way to describe him. He was just a delight to have on the screen and really did a lot of amazing food all season.
Yeah, I feel like, I don't want to, you know, cast the wide net here, but I feel like Chris seems like one of the genuinely, like, I don't know, nicest people that's been on the show in terms of, like, I feel like there wasn't really any conflict with him. He seemed like everyone that was just going around saying, my man, and, like, being very cheerful to everybody, which I'm assuming he was absolutely fantastic to be around. Haley loves my Chris impression. I'm assuming that's what that chortle was for.
What can I say?
Yeah, you know, like, when Carrie was asking him about the pie dough, and he was like, yeah, just look right here. And she was like, oh, yeah, it's raw. And he was like, yeah, well, you know, and it was, you could just tell he's a very super nice guy. And he didn't want to be like, this pie dough is terrible. But, you know, he was just a pleasure to have on the screen the whole season.
Absolutely. And it was so nice to see, you know, he talked in the very beginning of the episode and at the very beginning of the season as well about how it took him 5 times to apply to get on here. I do think that, like, everything happens for a reason in that regard. And I know that him sort of battling with alcoholism as well was tough, especially in that one German challenge where it was, hey, make this alcoholic-based side, and he really had to stare demons in the face, which, as we've seen in previous challenges, can be a very, very tough thing to do. And yeah, he hit a couple of roadblocks. You know, he definitely fell on his sword a bit with Restaurant Wars, and he had a little bit of trouble going out of his comfort zone in the challenge that Bruce was eliminated in, but he was just so much fun to watch and so much fun to listen to. I mean, his voice, again, I know I talked about this for weeks, but it's just, I could listen to that voice, read the phone book, to be quite honest. So, and that lemonade fried chicken he made in, like, the 4th episode still might stand out as, like, one of my favorite dishes of the entire season. I do agree, Jim, that I think one of the downsides of bringing someone back at Last Chance Kitchen at one point is that the people that go out from now on will not have a chance to work their way back into the competition. And so it's a little unfair that, you know, Chris got to work his way through and now he has no sort of chance to redeem himself like Joe Flam did. But them's the works. And I'm sure Chris would be the one to agree that I was the author of my own fate. And this just happened when it happened. And I'm so happy he made the connections with the people as well. It seemed like that was really the thing that he took away, was that in a time where he lost out on his support system due to his addiction, Haley, I think the fact that he was able to find a network of chef friends that he can really lean on, I think, was more important to him sometimes than the actual prize.
Yeah, it really did seem like that, especially in last week when his dish was really focused on what he's learned from each person in the competition. Oh my God, I'm probably going to get worked up and emotional here. But Chris was just such a genuine guy, and it seemed like everyone loved him so much. And it was really wonderful to watch him develop these connections with people around him. Like you said, you know, he lost a lot of his support systems during his battles, and it's just really nice to see that he's at a point in his life where he can be really proud of how far he's come.
Well, let's talk about what's to come, both on this season and Top Chef in general. Jim, it seems like next time we're finally getting that Rocky Mountain Oysters challenge, complete with a Michael Voltaggio cameo. Do you have any experience with Rocky Mountain Oysters?
I have tasted them before. They're okay. It's not the most, it's like any organ meat. Once the chefs sort of get it in their hands and feel it, I had the idea that they're going to know what to do with it. And I got to say that deep frying, those sorts of things are usually a good route to take. But I think that, you know, lots more puns coming, and it should be
not from us.
I don't know. Well, lots of puns from all directions. Maybe yeah, not as yeah. many from y'all as the show.
No, I don't have the balls to make puns about Rocky Mountain Oysters. Haley, are you excited to see the return of tattooed badass of Top Chef Michael Voltaggio?
I didn't watch his season, so he doesn't necessarily do a lot for me. But I can't remember which Voltaggio brother was. God, what was that show called? It was a show where celebrities went and cooked with professional chefs. And I think Busy Phillips cooked with Michael Voltaggio.
Are you talking about Worst Cooks in America?
No. I'm talking about, God, what was that show called? There was an episode with Mindy Kaling and Allison Hannigan. Someone knows what I'm talking about. Anyway, that's mostly my frame of reference for Michael. And, you know, his pop-ups in Top Chef. He's a babe. Yeah, sure. I'm excited about that. But he's not necessarily like the name drawer to me that he might be for other people.
Yeah, maybe you'll have a week to figure out exactly what that show was, because we'll be talking about him more next week. Now, Jim, you were mentioning before that you loved how Carrie and Chris both, were able to utilize Southern cooking. Or Adrian was in this episode. And we're going to get a lot of Southern cooking, I'm assuming, in next season of Top Chef. It was officially announced this week. Top Chef is going into Antonio Mazzaro's territory. It's going to Kentucky for Top Chef season 16. What's your initial reaction to Top Chef 16? Are you dismayed that, oh, I thought I was the only, Eastern Seaboard, Eastern time zone, Southern season on Top Chef, and now there's another one to add to the pile?
Oh no, I'm all for it. And Kentucky is a beautiful state. It's gorgeous. There's a reason why they call it bluegrass, and it's really the bluegrass state, and it's really intense. But there's so many amazing things that happen in Kentucky, from the Derby, Kentucky basketball. There's all sorts of, it's a really awesome state. They have some cool food traditions like the hot brown. I don't know if y'all are familiar with that, but
no.
it tastes way better than it sounds. And, I think that the Kentucky Derby, or the Kentucky, the state, Lexington, Louisville, there's a lot of cool things that they can really explore in that state. I think that it'll have to be more of a multi-city experience. I think that'll probably be good. Frankfurt, which is the capital, is a small town that's nestled almost directly in the middle between Louisville and Lexington. And so I think that there's a lot of cool stuff that can happen.
Yeah, Kaylee, I'm intrigued to hear from you as a non-American. A, do you have any opinions on Kentucky? And B, how do you feel about Top Chef going there?
The 20 minutes I spent in Covington, Kentucky was wonderful. I'm really excited for Top Chef to be going to Kentucky. I feel like we've had conversations about, like, where are they going to go next? They've hit a lot of the major hotspots. What are they going to do next? And I think Kentucky is a really, really cool, interesting choice. And I'm so excited to see what they do with it. I just think there's so many options. Like Jim said, they can travel throughout the state. It's not a huge state, but they have lots going on.
Yeah, I'll be excited to see exactly what happens. I think when you go in with expectations as to what challenges they're going to do, we end up like we did this episode of, oh, we can get a marijuana challenge. So who knows exactly what's going to happen? You obviously have, as Jim is talking about, the Derby. You have, of course, the eponymous Kentucky Fried Chicken. You have Fort Knox in there. So I'm sure there's a lot of stuff that they'll be able to do as they come up with season 16. But I'm happy that Top Chef will keep going, because I've loved what they've been doing so far, Colorado especially. And I'm excited to see where they keep going to new heights, both in Colorado and otherwise. One more quick thing I want to talk about. We didn't mention this last week. Fan favorite voting is out for this season. Jim, do you have a pick? Do you want to disclose to us who you are personally picking for fan favorite for this season?
I have voted so many times for Fatima, and I think, like most of America has, she will win this by a landslide, is my prediction. And that, as much as I see the other people on there trying to pump up there and get votes, I think that it's going to be a giant landslide. And you got to know that being regularly featured on Padma's social media has got to do wonders for your people following you and whatnot. And if you just sort of look at people's numbers as to like what their social media numbers look like, you will see that Fatima is crushing everybody.
Yeah, Haley, how many bots have you hired to vote for Fatima so far?
I can't vote for her.
Oh, right.
You can't vote in Canada. Like, and I tried. And I thought, oh, well, like, it's just voting. It's not going to be a big deal. Like, I'm going to be able to, like, vote on this online thing. And it says, voting not available in your area. And I was like, oh, my God. But I'm standing so hard for Fatima. So in lieu of my votes, can you please vote for her at least a couple times? Thank you.
Absolutely. You submit your absentee ballot and I will fill it in for you. I'll make it a 3 for 3. I think, like you said, I've really enjoyed this cast so far, and I completely understand how people are trying to pump themselves up. But I think between Fatima's confessionals, her journey, and obviously what's been going on outside of the show, I feel like I would definitely be pushing for her right now to get the prize. So make sure you go to the Top Chef site on BravoTV.com and make sure you do your fan voting. I believe you can keep doing it up until the finale when the winner will be revealed. And we've got a couple more weeks. You know, like I said before, we have a little bit of an extended end game where we went from 5 to 4. I'm assuming next week is 4 to 3, the week after 3 to 2, and then we'll finally have our finale. So you have plenty of weeks to vote for her. But that's going to bring it to the end of this podcast. Jim, thank you so, so much for, like Joe Flam, coming back and absolutely killing it. We were so happy to have you. How can people follow you on social media? And I know you plugged this event last time, but do you want to plug your Bruce event coming up in a couple months?
Yeah, I'm doing an event in Delaware. It's for the Meals on Wheels charity, which is an incredible charity. And people like Bruce, Carrie, I did hear that Sam Talbot, the legendary Sam Talbot, will be making an appearance, as well as John Tizar and Katsuji, and the list goes on and on. It's going to be an awesome event for a great charity. It's in April, so there's plenty of time to get your tickets together. And please follow me on social media. It's Chef Jim Smith. You can find all the links at chefjimsmith.com. Also, just very easy to search in your social media platforms, and you'll find me. I know that I may seem a little bit preoccupied with a sheer amount of numbers, but I don't know if it's like this in the industry that y'all are in. But if you're trying to get like a job or trying to promote something, oftentimes as a chef, the first question that people will ask you is how many social media followers do you have? And as brash and as harsh as that may sound, there are numbers, you know, and if you don't meet these sort of numbers, then you oftentimes aren't going to get a job. So if you want to see more of me, please contribute to my social media accounts so I don't have to go and buy a bunch of fake bots to like me. Hey, I do have something else for you guys.
Yeah.
I don't know if y'all noticed this. Did y'all, and you may not have gotten this in Canada, but did you get the Hidden Valley Ranch side-by-side commercial/cooking demo?
Oh, no, I wish.
No, I did not get that personally, but I had heard about it. Can you talk a little bit more about, for those of us that did not see it, exactly what was going on?
Well, it happened during the quickfire when, you know, Hidden Valley Ranch was the sponsor of the $10,000, and also the sponsor of Last Chance Kitchen, so I'm sure that, you know, they get this sort of deal. But it was literally a Hidden Valley Ranch commercial played side by side with this recipe, which is one of those like tasty recipes or one of those online like social media recipes where you just see people's hands making the dish. Mm-hmm. And I decided to make this dish bravely enough the day after after I guess Friday is when I made this dish. And I don't know. It was a little out there. But if you look at the dish, they took cod and they marinated it in soy, and then they baked tostadas, which then they drenched in Hidden Valley Ranch powder, and then they covered that in sriracha, and then they made a salad with cucumber ranch of radish, cabbage, lime, cilantro, and basil, and they put that on top of the fish, and then they finished all of that off with kimchi. So if you want to try a ridiculously potent recipe for a cod tostada that is sort of ranch, sort of Asian, and sort of Latin inspired, check out this recipe.
Interesting. I'm sure you caught Haley's attention not only the Hidden Valley Ranch, but the fact that it was topped with kimchi.
Very, very interesting recipe. And it was so weird to watch this side-by-side hands cooking / Hidden Valley Ranch commercial at the same time. It's very, very interesting split screen commercial / promotion thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Immersive advertising. Jim, by the way, totally tangential, are you excited for Survivor Ghost Island coming in a couple weeks?
Yes, I am crazy excited about Survivor Ghost Island. I'm a little bit behind on the First One Out series just because Big Brother has been so crazy and so good. Oh, I have, like, I do listen to all of the Taryn morning feeds and whatnot. And I don't get to watch as many live feeds as I would like, but it's been so good. And I don't know Well, how come there's no rap Project Runway coverage? Very much like I really love these reality shows where people are skilled. So I'm a big fan of Project Runway. I really like Ink Master, you know, Top Chef, obviously, more the reality shows that fall in this kind of camp. I don't like them all, really. But
yeah, like Bachelor Winter Games, that requires
a lot of skill. Look,
Bachelor Winter Games, I did not think I was going to live tweet that first episode, but I got so sucked in immediately.
It
was so hard not to be. I started looking at my Twitter and I kept talking and live tweeting. It was so hysterical. And like you, I was so mad at Claire about Benoit. Like, really, what the crap? Seriously. That's terrible. But there's so much good stuff going on TV right now. I can't wait for Ghost Island. It's good that there are so many things like Celebrity Big Brother to keep me occupied while I'm chomping at the bit for the new Survivor season.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, Haley, you talked about Bachelor Winter Games. That is only a drop in the bucket of the podcasting that you've been doing in the past couple of weeks. Do you want to go into that and plug your social media as well?
Oh my God, I feel like I've been all over the place the last couple of weeks. So Amy and I are doing our regular coverage of The Bachelor. We also have special coverage of Bachelor Winter Games coming out this weekend and next weekend with some really exciting guests that I think you guys are going to really like. What else have I got going on? I was on the Dom and Colin podcast and talked about The Good Place. You were on post-show recaps and talked about The Good Place. So if you want to, Good Place podcast, well, you know where to look.
Yeah, you got big two for one, yeah.
What else have I got going on, Mike? We've got, you and I have a special project coming up this weekend that should be a lot of fun. If you want to hear more of my voice, and I can't remember everything that I'm doing right now, you can follow me on Twitter at @hstrong_. My Instagram is the same, and I always kind of, you know, plug the podcast I'm on my Twitter, so you'll see it there.
And you can always follow me at @MikeBloomType on Twitter. Like Haley, I always plug the multitude of things that I do there, whether it is my exit interviews for Celebrity Big Brother, The Amazing Race, and Top Chef. I have not had the opportunity to talk with Chris yet at the time of this recording, but hopefully that should be out soon. Given our lavishing praise for Chris at the end of this podcast, I'm really excited to get his thoughts about his entire journey and what that sort of represented to him. You can also hear about the podcast I do about the aforementioned RuPaul's Drag Race, as well as The Amazing Race, which is finishing up. I talked about The Good Place. I do a movie podcast called The Hamster Factor, where I talked about The Cutting Edge, which is a nice Olympic figure skating movie from 1992. That's a lot of rom-com fun. I'll be doing another podcast about Christopher Guest for another show coming up very soon. So lots of stuff in the hopper. Be sure to check that out. Make sure you're also checking out the other great reality TV wrap-up stuff going on. As well as Haley mentioned, we've got a special surprise coming up at the end of this weekend that I will not to allude to just yet. But thank you all so much for listening. Jim, thank you so much for coming on again. I feel like if we're using a hashtag, it's got to be Joe Puffs, right?
Absolutely. I'm all for the Joe Puffs.
All right. Now the Photoshop contest is officially open to you Top Chef listeners out there. If you can make a Joe Puffs Photoshop and tweet that to all three of us, we'd always be very appreciative. We're always appreciative of any commentary you may leave, especially this late in the season. Jim, again, it was a pleasure to have you on. Thank you so, so much. We'll be back next week as the finals sally forth in Telluride. But for now, you may pack your knives and go.